Greetings, everyone. My name is William Porter. Welcome to this edition of Storytelling Time. This podcast is sponsored by Every.Black Entrepreneurs Podcasting Network. Today's podcast is from a previous video presentation of an interview I had with local businessman Troy Johnson. So here is that interview I had. Well, I'm very happy to have with us again, Mr. Troy Johnson. You were with us for a good while, I think about a couple of months ago, and you talked about your business pursuits as well as your faith, as a matter of fact, at that time. But today, we want to begin to talk about your health, your present health, your past health, issues relating to that. And we've talked about that a little bit, and it's very, very compelling. And what I want to do before we get into that, though, is quote a scripture, and we can use that as a base as we continue. And the verse of scripture comes from Hosea, the 4th chapter and the 6th verse. And this is what it says. My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge, because you have rejected knowledge. I also will reject you from being priests for me, because you have forgotten the law of your God. I will also forget your children. And I think this is relevant, and again, I think that we can address it as we move forward to relate this particular verse of scripture to some of the things that we'll talk about today. And also, before we get started with some of the experiences you've had as far as your health is concerned, and more specifically, weight loss and weight gain and those kinds of issues, let me quote something to you, something that I read. I believe it was from a government publication. And I think it's very interesting, and it's significant as far as what we're talking about today. And it relates to crime statistics here in the Raleigh, North Carolina area. And there's some good news and some bad news relating to that. And the good news is that overall, the crime rate in Raleigh is 3% lower than the national average. And another positive thing about the crime situation here in Raleigh is that it's safer, that is, the city of Raleigh is safer than 34% of the cities in the United States. So that's kind of interesting. But I want to shed some light on some rather negative statistics as well. And that is, in Raleigh, you have a 1 in 38 chance of becoming a victim of crime, of any kind of crime. That's one statistic. And another statistic is for every 100,000 people, there are 8 daily crimes occurring within the city. And that's rather alarming. Now, I know you work with young people from 6, I believe, to 18 years of age, people who definitely need our help, the guidance from adults in terms of their young careers. So one of the things I want to ask you about is what you do as far as your business in the Raleigh area. You've been at it for quite some time. So tell us about that before we get into some of the health issues a little bit later.
All right, well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate you having me. So, yes, I do work with young people, more specifically young men ages 7 to 17. And we take them through a variety of life skills, character-based education, and different sorts of physical activity. So using those to help mold the minds and change the trajectory of some of those statistics, you know, really impacting not Generation Next, but Generation Now. And yes, we've been doing that since June of 2017.
Well, that's great. And as I said, we definitely need that kind of guidance as far as our children are concerned. And let's take a brief break right now before we move forward. And again, we want to recognize our sponsor, Every Dot Black, Entrepreneurs Podcasting Network. And we'll return in just a minute with this discussion. Talking with Mr. Troy Johnson about some of his personal issues with food intake, food consumption, and the health issues that resulted from that. And I'd like to ask you, Troy, as we get started with this topic, exactly what was your relationship with food as a child? And I assume that, like most of us, we've had some very fond experiences back home eating with our mothers and grandmothers cooking very sumptuous meals. But a lot of those meals weren't necessarily the best thing for us. But anyway, give us your experiences as a child as far as food consumption.
Absolutely. So I consider myself a connoisseur of food. I think I've learned that if you want talent at a very young age, raised by a single mom and my grandparents, yes, that what you speak of and having grandma's cooking was definitely a huge part of my childhood. So I'll never forget it. It made me laugh when I heard the question on the inside, because my grandmother would always make me clean the plate so I couldn't throw away food even if I was full. And, you know, years later, they would poke at me as I continued to get bigger. I was a very portly child. So, yeah, I always had a great relationship with food. It was all love and no hate. And having grandma around to cook it made it that much better.
Yeah, well, I certainly can relate to that, because I had a grandmother, too, who wanted all of us to eat everything on our plates. And, of course, as young kids, we tend to put more on the plate than what we can eat. And I'm sure you've heard the expression,
your eyes
are bigger than your stomach.
Yeah,
and so we had to eat everything. So anyway, tell us about, did you have a favorite food that your grandmother cooked back in those days?
See, that's hard. See, that's singular, right? So I'll never forget, even as I grew up from a child into adult and adolescent, there was always one thing that I always asked my grandmother to cook for me, no matter what, whether I was coming home, whether it was the holidays, and that was peach cobbler. So I had and I always loved a lot of crust, you know, and it couldn't be dry. So she had a special way, you know. I don't know what it was, but she always had a special way. There was always crust on the bottom, on the top, and plenty of nutmeg and cinnamon and butter and brown sugar. It was good.
All the things unfortunately.
Right, absolutely. But as a child, you know, hey, that was the best thing since sliced bread.
Well, so I still like that. Absolutely. You know, peach cobbler. So, but tell us this. So what was your typical breakfast like, as well as lunch and dinner? And tell us about the snacks that you partook.
Well,
it's beginning with breakfast.
Just like any other child, a latchkey kid, was the only child, only grandchild until I was in my 20s. Whatever was in the house, I had free reign in the house. So if there was Rice Krispie treats or whatever the case may be, was there. And I'll never forget, as a child, I was the kid that sold candy at school. So I always had candy in my book bag, you know. I was always a young entrepreneur. Any way that I can, you know, make things happen, as honey buns. So, yeah, anything that was in the house, as far as breakfast is concerned, cereal, it's easy, you know. But, of course, it was probably very sweet. And for lunch, I ate lunch at school. So the lunch at school, you know, it wasn't all that unfavorable, but you, if you had a couple extra dollars, you can go get honey buns or go get Rice Krispie treats or go get a cookie, right? If you had another quarter or 50 cents. So I frequent the cookies and the honey buns, especially at lunchtime. And of course, dinner. Dinner was always thorough at grandma's house. You know, you had a vegetable, a starch, a meat, a salad, you know, whatever the case may be. There was always, you know, plenty, and the portions were heavy.
Well, speaking of salads, I didn't even know what a salad was growing up until later. And most of the food that we ate were cooked foods, mm-hmm. and in many cases, overly cooked foods. Mm-hmm. And of course, mm-hmm. when you do that, the nutrients are cooked out,
right,
or removed. And so that's not necessarily the best thing. But it's kind of interesting. We learn to consume these foods that are not necessarily good for us simply because it's taste, usually. Mm. And by the same token, we can unlearn that. And I guess that's where you came to later in life, as you began to develop more of a knowledge of what to eat and what not to eat. In spite of how good it might taste. For example, you probably don't consume as many honey buns now as you once did.
As I once did. Yeah. There you go. So, absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Growing up is really a challenge, and especially at home, because you're at home most of the time, mm-hmm. and whatever your parents, mother, grandparents tell you to eat or bring forward to you, to eat, then that's what you do.
That's right.
Or you don't eat it all. And so most of those foods are very, very flavorful. And so that's what the situation was all about. Now, of course, eventually you didn't stay at home. You were in the community quite a bit, I assume. For one thing, you had to go to school. Speaking of that, I remember when I was very young, I had a young sister, I think it was the first, second grade, we used to go to school together. We used to walk to school.
Okay.
And we were given an allowance. But on some occasions, maybe even many occasions, instead of purchasing the lunch at the school like we should have done at the time, I stopped by a local grocery store, and they had these ginger snaps and some other cookies that that were very convenient to purchase, and potato chips. I had a weakness for potato chips, and so that's what we got. Of course, I was being contrary.
Right.
I'm sure my parents, my mother at least, didn't want me to do that. So sometimes we do a lot of things that we're not supposed to do growing up, obviously. But again, you were in the community, going to school. What was your early life like as far as going to school and what you ate at lunch at school, for example? Did your school provide a lot of nutritious alternatives or not?
No, not really. I mean, in the 90s, we got square boxes of, square pizza and bags of milk. You know, they'll throw in the corn and bean mix, but of course, just like any other child, and in most cases, we wouldn't eat that. But I do remember when we started to get alternatives, right? So, but a lot of the alternatives were added snacks rather than maybe potentially a salad bar. I don't remember that, you know, as a child. You know, I mean, clearly now that's changed. And there's a lot more options in high school, especially a lot of these high schools. But as a young man, no. We had corn dogs and whatever was put on that little plastic tray, you know. Every now and again, we'd bring stuff from home, but I can honestly say the things that I brought from home probably weren't much better, you know, convenience and quick, packaged and processed, right? And so it all became the same vicious cycle.
Well, again, in the community that you came up in, and certainly the community I came up in, there was a value placed on eating in the first place. Not necessarily the kinds of foods that we consume, but the fact that we did and could have a meal.
Right.
And that had a significant value to it. Now, in addition to school, of course, did you attend church quite frequently coming up?
Oh, absolutely. my grandmother kept me in junior everything, junior choir, junior usher board.
Yeah, so, I think you mentioned that last time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Ebenezer Baptist Church, we was there at least twice a week. You know, my grandfather was one of the trustees, and my grandmother was one of the deaconess, so, yeah.
And of course, at church on occasion, especially when you have these functions at church, they have food. As a matter of fact, oftentimes food is a central thing along with whatever other activity is going on. And again, at least I found that the foods weren't too much better there than they were at home in terms of being nutritious.
Mm,
now,
choices,
they were very
yeah.
flavorful.
Oh, absolutely. And,
but not very nutritious to a large extent. So what were some of the things that that you remember consuming at some of these church events? Was it kind of similar to what you had at home?
Well, I mean, let's be honest, food brings people together, and I think it's no different at church events. I think a lot of it has changed then, but now. But then, yes, when food came together, it was fried everything, and that was what we normally ate. Whether it was chicken, whether it was pork, in most cases, it was fried. Mashed potatoes, collard greens, some of the same things that we indulge in during the holidays, and it was heavily consumed. But I think everything in moderation, but at that time that wasn't even a thought process, right? I think you said it earlier, and you're absolutely right. Even as a child, some of the young people that we ate for Thanksgiving just a couple weeks ago did the same thing, you know, put so much on their plate and then, like, they couldn't go back. And it was funny because the dad, my little cousin, made her eat it. Right? You know, you put it on your plate, you go eat it. It brought me back. It really did, because I remember those days. But we do that. You know, I think you said it, your eyes are bigger than your stomach, right? And like, you can't go back. You can always get more. So even in those days, it was just so much. I mean, there was I think, you know, with grandma, it was always cook more than less, right? You never want to run out. That was almost an insult for you to run out of food. So I hate to say it, but it was somewhat gluttony. It really was, you know. It was like, and we know what that leads to. So, yeah, and in earlier days, not just at home, but at church, no different.
And by the same token, if you don't eat everything that's presented to you, then that can be
ungrateful,
an insult. So you have to eat everything.
You gotta eat everything, right? Yeah, that's right. And in some cultures, that's fact, right? You gotta eat everything on your plate. For us, it's more of one of those unwritten laws, right?
Exactly.
One of grandma's unwritten laws. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you have a situation at home where you're eating. You have a situation at church on occasion when you're eating. And of course, I'm sure, especially as you continued in your education into middle school and high school, you participated in various functions, social events, for example, football games and whatnot, tailgating, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
And so what were some of the things you remembered eating at some of those events? So, for example, tailgating at football games, school socials, and that kind of thing.
No different. You know, a pack with usually salt and sugar. You know, I say that because potato chips, right? I think you spoke about that earlier. No different, right? Any type of potato chips. And then, of course, I say meat. Right? A large consumption of any type of grilled meat, and we know how that can potentially add to a backup or buildup as it pertains to eating a lot of those processed and solid foods. But during those times, like again, I think a lot of that comes through learning experiences, age, maturity, and really educating yourself on how that can affect you, you know. But I think no different, and mixed with a whole lot of more yeast-based alcoholic beverages, right, to go along with that. So a lot of that compounds and continues to work on the body. And for me, I just continued to get bigger, you know. And it wasn't that I was felt a certain type of way about being big. I just never was to a point that it mattered, right? It didn't bother me to a point where it really mattered.
Well, speaking of that, we want to transition from some of the things you did as far as food consumption at home, at church, in the community, for example, at school, social events and whatnot, and how that did affect your weight at that time. And so we're going to come back and talk to Troy about that. So stay with us. With Troy Johnson, and he's talking to us about health issues, and in particular eating habits at home and at church and in the community as he was growing up. And on this particular segment, we want to talk to him about some of the results of all of the good eating that you had, and I'm sure it was good eating, at least that's the way we looked at it. Coming up, that's certainly the way I looked at it. So when exactly, and I think you were beginning to touch on this before we left prior to the break, when did you first recognize that there was a relationship between the food that you were eating and at least potential weight issues?
I never forget, in my early 20s, I was probably about 390 pounds, give or take. And of course, I'm not very tall, so I became very wide, right? So I thought I wore the weight well, you know. Obviously, you being in that body, right? You seeing yourself, but I was somewhat oftentimes I was working for the government at the time. And we had to don these immersion suits. So it's a big red suit that if everything fails and the ship fails, you have to put on this suit so you can float and stay alive. And they weren't but so big. Well, to keep the job, you had to be able to do this. And for me, it was a struggle. I think it took me about 15, 20 minutes, you know. And, you know, there's a lot of other examples, but I can definitely remember that one for sure. And, you know, for a person to make that decision and decide that, you know, hey, enough is enough, that was one. The second one was my little girl. So my child, the love of your children. And, you know, clearly we're not promised, you know, time, minute, hour. We don't know. We don't know how long we'll be here. But I decided I wanted to make a change. And my change was a lot more drastic than just the food that we eat, right? You know, my change had to deal with being a modern day Frankenstein, you know, really making a decision to say, I want to do this surgery to help affect my life, not knowing the other side of it. You know, not having any clue about what the other side was. But I did know that I had lived in a fat body my whole life. And if there was an opportunity for me to live life differently, I was willing to put myself through that. And I did it. You know, I did it. And so in combination with, and that really was the turning point of the relationship with food, because I forced myself to do it, right? That, you know, me going through gastric bypass surgery forced me because that made my body react a certain type of way. So a lot of the things that I was used to eating, that grease and that, you know, salt everywhere, my body rejected it. I mean, so much so that I would make myself sick. So when I decided to do that I got married in 12, so it was 11. So it's been 8 years. Wow. Yeah. So in August of next year will be 9 years that that I had my gastric bypass surgery. In the first year of it, 2012, was when I got married. First year, I lost 120 pounds. It was like drastic. You know, it really was. My body was almost rejecting itself. And that's when that process started, you know. So 8 years ago, that process started of me forcing myself to have a different relationship with food. And psychologically, that hurt because I was trapped in this fat body for 31 years. So really reprogramming, you talk about a reset button, when you talk about a reset button, man, that's what that was, man. That was me unplugging, like the Matrix, just unplugging and really forcing my body to retrain itself as it pertains to food and exercise.
Right. Well, there are many strategies that we all can use to deal with weight issues, and of course you made the decision to do that, but ultimately it comes down to eating the right foods to maintain a proper weight and a proper health situation. Right. So and of course it's an individual decision, but things have been going pretty well with you with
respect to that. Oh man, early on I wouldn't wish it on anyone. So from an individual perspective, with me, the first year, I caused a lot of detriment to me. So again, reprogramming and really wanting to have some of those same habits that I had as it pertains to the relationship with food. But here now in the last 5 to 6 years, definitely changing the eating habits so much to a point where not just what is being ate, but portions. In moderation, and really using food as fuel rather than just eating, you know, and being more conscious of what's being put into your body and how it will affect, good or bad. So that coupled with knowledge and like we talked about, and really a want. This is now another part of my life. This is now a priority, more as early on in life, you know, and for a lot of us, or most of us, we just look at food differently. We eat it just to be eating it. Where now again, it's intentional.
Right. You know? And speaking of being intentional, and we're coming to the close of the show for today. Mm-hmm. But next week, what we want to do is talk about some specifics as far as what you're doing, as far as maintaining your weight, and some of the suggestions or recommendations that you would have based on your experience as far as what we all should eat to maintain proper health and weight and that kind of thing. So. Again, we'd like to thank you for being with us today. It's been very enlightening, despite the negative aspects of it. But we have to deal with those aspects in order to improve, to recognize that we are going down the wrong track. And whatever strategy we decide to utilize to move away from that, I think that's very significant. Do you have any closing thoughts that you want to tell our viewers before we finish this particular segment of the program? And also, while you're doing that, you give everybody your contact information as well.
Absolutely. So I'm Troy Jermaine Johnson. You can reach not just myself, but our organization at 919-714-9905. Our website is ym4c.org. Last thought, I'm writing a book now called Discipline is the D in Succeed. and speaks about why discipline is important. And I think every aspect of our life, whether it's mentally, spiritually, physically, or even our relationship as it pertains to food, has to have discipline. I think that's probably one of the greatest lessons I learned in 2019, and I believe will catapult me into 2020. So discipline, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, your goals, your dreams, whatever it pertains to, want it so much, just like breathing, right? Where it becomes natural, it just becomes par for the course.
Well, again, Troy, thanks for being with us, and we'll be back again next week to receive the wisdom that that you have relating to this subject. And I'd like to thank all our viewers as well for being with us today on this particular segment of Storytelling Time. And especially our sponsor, Every Dot Black Entrepreneur Podcasting Network. I'd like to pay respects to this organization for making these broadcasts possible. So, in closing, whatever you're going through, whether it's good or bad, just keep in mind, there's always more good things coming your way. See you next week.